Accession number 7394, Real 2.
Mr. Stedman, Real 2.
Well, Africans were expected and largely accepted that they had a place subservient to the Europeans.
What impression, if any, did the Kakar of Bougan make on you?
He was a young man. He was dressed in tribal gear. Beyond that, I can't recall.
What did the tribal gear consist of?
What do they call those flowing gowns that they wear? But it was very highly decorated, and a skull hat.
What happened next after the unit set off?
We went to Nairobi and then by truck to Mitabiri camp, which is beyond Thika, about another 8 miles beyond Thika. We formed 26th Brigade. The other battalions were 3rd, 6th and 2nd, 2nd. The brigade commander was Brigadier Dimlin. It was a very, very big camp, obviously, to house a brigade, and the other battalions were dispersed quite a long way from us. I can only recall that we ever did one brigade exercise. Obviously, the officers went along to brigade headquarters for a lot of instruction and tutes and so on. And we weren't there very long. I took the opportunity of visiting my cousin and family, and gradually, to some extent, came into the social life of Thika. I met the district commissioner and various other farmers and civil servants. The social life was centred on the club and also the Blue Posts Hotel.
Which hotel?
Blue Posts. Whilst we were at Mitabiri, we were joined by a number of white NCOs from Rhodesia, southern Rhodesia as it was then. They were a nice lot of chaps. One of them was Evan Campbell, who was subsequently High Commissioner for Rhodesia just before UDI, High Commissioner in London, when I went to visit him.
Did the Rhodesians fit in?
Oh, yes. Mind you, they followed the South African tradition of being a little bit overbearing to Africans and harsh and strict to a degree.
Can you give some examples?
Yes, I can recall one of them actually beating one of the drivers, and then overcome by remorse, he came to me and asked my advice on what he should do, because the driver had certainly taken umbrage to this beating and was, we thought, about to report him to his platoon commander.
What had sparked off the incident?
I have no idea.
Did he beat him with his fist or what?
Yeah. But it was It was not. That was the only incident of beating that I can never recall in the whole of my service. But it was a little bit typical of the way the Rhodesians thought and dealt with the Africans.
Was that type of thing banned by the army?
Oh, yes. Whether it was banned by specific instruction, I just don't know. I suppose it must have been, but it wasn't something that my colleagues or the officers would have done.
What rank did the Rhodesian have?
Sergeant.
And did he get into trouble for it?
No, I advised him to go and see the company commander and confess to what he'd done and say it was done in a fit of pique. And the company commander accepted that.
And did the driver complain?
That I don't know.
Was there any corporal punishment in the unit at all?
Yes. This could be given as a punishment at company office, and it took the form of beating by probably the CSM, the native CSM, with what was called a kiboko, which was a flail of rhinoceros thongs, I believe.
Did you see such a punishment?
Yes, I did.
What was it given for?
Oh, serious offences, such as stealing. Not frequently. I can recall perhaps no more than two or three such punishments.
Were they given for stealing?
I expect so. I can't recall now.
How many strokes would have been given?
Ten, I suppose.
Was it done publicly or privately?
No, publicly.
And how did the person who was being punished take the punishment?
Oh, they took it quite bravely, I thought, and strangely enough, feel that they accepted it as a fair punishment.
What made you think that?
In that they seemed to harbour no resentment afterwards.
Was blood drawn or not?
No.
Now, we were at Mitubiri. Did any other incidents happen whilst you were there that we should mention?
No, I don't think so. No.
What happened next?
We entrained for Mombasa. Our battalion went on board a troop ship, which I'm fairly certain was called the Salween. I can't be absolutely certain because I went on a number of troop ships during the whole of my African service, one of which was definitely the Salween, but I think this one was the Salween. A voyage of, I don't know, 4 days perhaps, 4 or 5 days, past Cape Gardafui, and we put in at Berbera. We disembarked onto lighters and then ashore. Berbera was the most god-awful place I'd ever seen. It was terribly hot. The temperature never dropped below 120 when we were there. Just a complete waste of sand and sparse scrub. Anyway, we weren't there very long. We moved up to a camp which was later termed Mile 20. And I think after a day there, we went on to Hargeisa. in the piece of paper, I said we were there 2 or 3 weeks. I think it must have been a bit longer than that. But after a few weeks, I was sent back to Kenya on a course. I always felt this was absolutely stupid because it was a week's course in field works. And to send me right from British Somaliland back to Gilgil in Kenya for a week's course in field works seemed to me the height of stupidity.
Was this a sapper course?
No, just digging trenches and defences.
So was it of no use to you later?
No, I can honestly say it never... I never got any benefit out of it. I can dig a hole with the next man.
Is it literally just learning how to dig holes?
Largely, yes.
Was there supposed to be some special technique in doing it?
No, brute strength, I think, is the is the main thing you need.
So what happened after your course?
Well, I was fortunate enough to have another leave, which I spent with my cousin and the family. And then I went back once again on a troop ship up to Berbera and rejoined the battalion at Hargeisa. But all the time I'd been away, and I'd been away a long time, perhaps I could backtrack a little bit here. On my way down to Kenya, I got in the hands of an organisation called Movement Control, which was all control over movement. And the way I got to Mombasa from Berbera was to go from Berbera to Aden, got stuck in a camp there for some weeks, back to Berbera, and then to Mombasa via Aden again. Oh, that's just sidetracking.
Was this part of the army?
Yeah, yeah.
Movement Control?
Yeah.
Part of the KAR?
I'm a little uncertain about that. It could have been an Imperial unit.
What happened back in Somaliland?
Well, I got back there. The battalion had only just come to Hargeisa. When I say the battalion, I perhaps ought to reconsider here. I can only really speak for headquarter company. I don't know exactly where the companies were. Certainly headquarter company had been based at Zaila, which is on the borders of British and French Somaliland. I suppose, although I can't say this from my own personal knowledge, that the companies were dispersed and engaged in this blockade of Djibouti.
But what were your own duties in Somaliland?
Well, ACAC platoon was very much a dog's body platoon. There was no there was no enemy aircraft to worry about. And we got roped in for all sorts of fatigues that battalion headquarters wanted doing. We continued training, but we weren't sent on any exercises or escort duties or anything of that description.
What equipment did you have in the way of ACAC?
Only Bren guns mounted on the ACAC tripods.
So what happened next?
Well, we moved off from Hargeisa in battalion transport to a camp at a crater lake near Addis. We may have stopped perhaps for an odd week or a few days at Jigjiga and Hargeisa, not Hargeisa, Hara and Diridawa. However, we moved to this Crater Lake camp, which was a wonderful camp. It was a place called Arda. The Africans had their camp on the lip of the crater, and we Europeans went down to the shores of the lake. Very pleasant. Can't recall a lot about it. The only thing that I can recall, which may be worth commenting on, the CO of the battalion was a very strict man on the subject of interracial mixing. And I remember the British RSM invited the African RSM down to our mess late one afternoon for a social get-together, something that had never happened before and probably wouldn't have been approved by the CO. But it was a very pleasant interlude, and I'm sure this chap enjoyed it, and we had a few drinks and sent him on his way rejoicing afterwards.
Do you know what the CO's motivation was about this?
It was his, the way he'd been trained, I suppose. He had come to the battalion, I believe, from a West African regiment. He must have done a lot of colonial service. And he was very much a man of the attitude that I tried to describe so inadequately earlier.
Was the African RSM at ease with you?
Yes, he was. He was a fairly fluent English speaker. And I suppose the only African soldier who ever spoke English to me.
Was there any reciprocal invitation to their mess?
No.
Why not?
They would have been ill at ease, I think.
Was there any other social mixing? I mean, did you join in tribal dances or anything of that kind?
We used to go and watch them, and if we'd had a few drinks, we might have indeed have joined with them.
Did that actually happen?
Oh, yes, yes.
And did the Africans welcome it?
Oh, yes, very much so. Yes, they enjoyed it.
What about the question of female company for European officers? Did that arise in Abyssinia?
Absolutely not. We never saw any European females, and the question of going with African women would have been jumped on so severely that it wasn't worth the candle.
Would there have been punishments, formal punishments?
Oh yes, yes, I'm sure there would have been. No, we led a very celibate life.
Did that cause any problems?
No, not particularly. No, I don't think it did.
People were happy to accept it, were they? Mm. What happened next?
Now then, we're coming on to somewhere about October, I think. Well, we moved up through Addis. I remember stopping there a day. And you mentioned female company. I remember going to a nightclub which there were Italian young women. But we didn't get a look in. Obviously, units that had been there before us were very much at home, and we were kept out on the periphery. But we were there no more than a day, I don't think, and then we set off north. I subsequently knew we were going to Gondar, but at the time I didn't. We went in battalion transport. I suppose there may have been an odd few troop carriers, that is, 3-ton trucks attached to us as well, since I don't see quite how the whole battalion could have got on the transport that we had, although I can't remember them. From memory, each platoon had a platoon truck, a 1500 weight truck, and the company had perhaps 3 or 4 3-tonners. The transport section was detailed to go behind, obviously, and my platoon, the ACAC platoon, was detailed to look after them or to form a guard for them. The job of the transport, obviously, was to deal with broken down and damaged trucks, of which there were quite a number on the journey north. The journey north took, I just don't know how long, 10 days perhaps. The casualties that we met in for the transport were broken springs largely, U-bolts, the centre bolt on the U-bolt broken, the...
Did you say U-bolt?
U-bolt, you know, that holds the springs together. There were other minor problems with distributors and petrol feed, broken radiator, one crashed 3-tonner. Clutches burnt out. And the transport colour sergeant, whose name was either Sanders or Saunders, I can't remember which, plus an African corporal who was extremely good, they performed miracles with this transport. They got the only vehicle that we had to abandon out of all the whole battalion's transport was 1 3-tonner, which had a very bad crash, and they got them all through.
Did they have spare clutches?
No. Well, yes. Sandy had a 3-ton vehicle with a lot of spares on it. He was able to call on Remy were following up behind us, and he was able on occasions to go back and get anything from Remy. I was very impressed with this African corporal. He was very, very good, as indeed was Sandy. But we gradually got further and further behind the convoy. In fact, we didn't see them after the first night. In fact, we never caught up with them the first night. One thing that impressed me, though, on this journey was the road-building capabilities of the Italians. They had the most marvellous roads. In fact, north of Addis, you go through what is called the, or what was then called, the Mussolini Pass, which was a series of tunnels cut right through a rock face, and then down some most spectacular escarpments in a zigzag form. The road was metalled out of Addis for perhaps 30 miles, and then we must have got onto a road which went to Asmara, because towards the end of our journey, we got into a metal road again, but we could see this road, we joined this road, which was metalled either side, and obviously went to Asmara. We went through Desi, I was leading our mini convoy, because as we repaired each truck, it joined our convoy, you see. And I remember my fear was that I might take the wrong turning at Desi. It was only two turnings you could take, but I'd take the right hand one. I think we went through a place called Amberlagi, but there were a number of places with a prefix amber. But that one I do recall. We eventually joined the battalion, I think, 2 or 3 days late, possibly even longer, I just don't know. The weather was foul, it was raining hard, cold. Oh, before I leave that subject of the journey north, though, and on the subject of road building, there was a spectacular escarpment well north of Desi. It was cut almost out of a vertical cliff, and it went, I suppose, for a good mile, rising, I suppose, 2,000 or 3,000 feet. Must have been longer than a mile, a couple of miles, and it must have entailed the most monumental problems to be overcome, this particular road. It had been badly damaged, and we had the greatest difficulty in getting up with landslides and potholes and so on. It made a great impression on me, this place. I don't know the name of it. It was a wonderful piece of engineering. Anyway, we've arrived at the battalion again, late. We did, I heard, but I had no direct knowledge, that they'd had some patrol activity with the companies, but what they amounted to I don't know.
Was this the first time that your unit had been in contact with the Italians?
Yes, yeah. Anyway, I'm sure it was the following morning, we seemed to have no rest at all. My platoon, which I've previously described as a dog's body platoon, was given the task of transporting boxes of ammunition to a forward area using donkeys. And I had 15 or 20 donkeys placed under my command. So I'm not very used to handling donkeys. We slung a box of ammunition on either side of the donkey, and that was a heck of a load, because they're only little things. And we set off. The Askaris were a bit excited.